Hi, my name is Helen. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's good to be sober. I'd like to say congratulations to that man that took the 90-day token. And I'd like to welcome all of the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous that didn't introduce themselves. And I'd like to welcome all of the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous that did introduce themselves. And if you're like me, when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I like to come late and I like to leave early. And the last thing I want to have to do is meet any full-fledged members. The full-fledged members in Alcoholics Anonymous that get contagious. This time when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always say this time, I pray that it's the last time, but I don't know that. I don't read palms. I don't read minds. And I don't always know what God's will is to the man that was sharing for his 90-day token. I know when I'm listening to my gut, I'm listening to God's will, and when I'm listening to my head, I'm listening to self-will. But sometimes it's very difficult for me to determine the difference between the two. So this time when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was 1981. I was coming out of the farm in El Toro on my ninth 502. And the last thing I wanted to be was sober. Let me tell you that. I couldn't even believe that the court would send me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had been court appointed to Alcoholics Anonymous since I was a teenager. What was the point? And when the judge said, you're going to go to 5 meetings a week of Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, hey, don't you know that Alcoholics Anonymous don't work? And the judge said, I don't care if Alcoholics Anonymous works or not, you're going anyhow. He gave me an alternative. The alternative was that I could serve 1 year. I may not look very bright, but I'm not an idiot. I naturally took the 5 meetings a week. I figured it'd be like all the rest of them AA meetings I had been court appointed to. You come late, you leave early, and you see who you can put together while you're there. And then you got a victim for the next time. That's what I figured it was going to be like. So I'm going to tell you where I started in 1981. 1981, when I went to that morning meeting, I was driving up and down Santa Ana on Tustin Avenue looking for this meeting that said Rubino's in the directory. And the only thing I could find was a Ruben's restaurant on Tustin Avenue. And I went to the payphone and I called the operator and I said, hey, I can't find this place. And she said, oh, the thing there is Ruben's restaurant. And I said, you're kidding. I really like this idea that Orange County is holding its AA meetings with a bar. I think that's damn terrific. Too bad L.A. couldn't get it. And so I was rather excited, and I pulled back in front, and I sat in the circle round parking area, and I waited. And nobody show up. And the meeting's supposed to start at 7:30, and it's almost a quarter till 8. And this young man pulled up. And he was in a 69 Mustang, and he came over and he said, hi. And I said, hi. He said, are you with that AA? And I said, hell no. And then I looked at him and I said, are you? And he said, hell no. And right away we had the common solution. He said, you want to go have a beer and play some pool? Well, hell yes, I did. It was almost 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning. That was above a lot of my standards. I said, yeah, I'd like to, but I'm going to go down with my friend Jose and drink some tequila. And I said, bye-bye now. And me and this young man parted. But something different happened that day. While I was sitting in that parking lot, I wondered where all those full-fledged members of Alcoholics Anonymous really were. How come none of them was at that meeting? And do they tell each other that nobody shows up? Or do they just lie to each other and pretend they were all there that day? Doesn't seem so funny. It doesn't seem so outrageous. But to me at the time, it seemed like it could be real. Tell you the delusions I came here with. So I decided I would go back to that morning meeting the next day and make myself the personalized snitch. Tell all of them do-gooders that none of them was there. Snitch on every one of them. That was my purpose for going. And so I went to that morning meeting, and I showed up like I always like to show up. That was with my red short shorts, my tank shirt, my push-up bra, my thongs, and my big straw bag. And I thought for sure I was going to take that meeting by storm. And I walked in there, and there was people in suits and ties. There were six of them, ladies dressed in full clothing. And they kind of looked at me like, where the hell are you from? And I looked at them like, where the hell are you from? And I don't talk in AA meetings then. For all them years I was court appointed, I never introduced myself. I give the new people a lot of credit. I never said, hi, my name's Helen and I'm an alcoholic. Mm-mm. What I would say is F you and keep moving. And believe me, those people don't pick up better things to do. You got to find somebody that wants it, not somebody that needs it. And all I know is that when I was sitting in that meeting, I was looking at each one of them thinking, did you tell the guy next to you you wasn't here yesterday? Because I'm going to do it for you. And at the end of the meeting, I says to the secretary, hey, you know what? Nobody was here yesterday. You know that? And he looked at me and he said, uh-huh. And he was signing my court card. And I also took my girlfriend's court card, and he refused to sign it. I couldn't understand that. You'd like to come when I'm secretary, because I don't care if you're there or not. I sign them court cards. You know why? Because somebody did mine a lot of times. And Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous works if I work it. And Alcoholics Anonymous works if I gut level know that I have had the last drink. That I'm accepting my alcoholism 100%, not 99.9, and that was the difference for me. But that secretary looked back at me and he said, you know, we don't even, and I gave him 15 minutes of profanity with the lecture of how nobody was there, and he said, you know, we don't even have a meeting here on Sunday. And I whipped out that directory and I says, it's right in this little thing right here. And he looked at me and he said, I don't care, that's a typo. And I knew a lot of four-letter words, but I didn't know what a typo was. I had not an idea. And I just looked at him and I thought, oh yeah, just like a used car salesman gonna talk over my head using them big words. I had no idea it was a four-letter word. I wasn't a secretary. And I remember leaving that meeting thinking to myself, well, this guy pissed me off so bad, I'll be back there tomorrow. And that's the only reason why I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, to be very honest with you. I know how to get my court card signed someplace else. When I was in the farm that last time in 1981, there were two girls there doing time for forged court cards. I thought, now how does that work? How could they ever figure that out if we are not organized? I don't think I'm telling you anything you don't already know. If you don't want to get sober, you ain't going to get sober. And that's the way I always left Alcoholics Anonymous. I always wanted to be drunk more than I wanted to be sober. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no self-worth, no self-dignity, and no real future, not know if it was going to be hooked up with the state of California, if I was lucky. If I didn't kill somebody instead of taking myself out. And a lot of people would have gave a shit less then. So all I can tell you is sitting in that meeting with those six people was not an easy thing for me to do. But I hadn't been there very long when this guy come up and he gave me his card and he said, call me. I thought, why not? And I wasn't sober yet. That was September when I got out of jail, and my sobriety date is October 22nd, 1981. So I just had the privilege of celebrating 18 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was never supposed to happen for me. 18 days, 18 months, 18 anything. The man I'm talking to, just sitting next to there and talking with, he showed me his 18-month chip. And I said, congratulations, and I showed him my 18-year chip. But all of that is one day at a time without a drink. And that's the Alcoholics Anonymous that I know. If it works for me, it'll work for you, and if it works for you, it'll work for me. No, it's not always going to be the same. And we're not always going to understand, and we're not going to interpret the 12 steps of recovery the same. But I think Alcoholics Anonymous works if we work it. There was this old man in that morning meeting, and he used to say this, you know, Helen, you don't have to worry about going to jail if you don't drink, probably. And he'd scratch his head. And I think, God, what a smart son of a bitch. You know? I've never been to jail without drinking yet. And then I'd start in with my profanity. But the truth of the matter was that I couldn't very well end up in jail on a drunk driving, on a drunken disorderly, a drunk in public, a drunk in assault, a drunk in prostitution, a drunk in anything, and else I was drinking. And that man was telling me the truth. And I instantly hated him. A couple of days later, this guy come up and he gave me his card and he said, call me. Well, I don't know about you, but this was between that period of September when I got out of jail and October when I got sober. When I'm drinking, I get, every now and then I got to call people. In the 60s, I used to call the White House. I was so desperate for Kennedy to understand the state of affairs, goddammit, up there on Fillmore Street. You got to come up here. You got to be a part of this. Every time you call the White House, I guess it's still the same. I don't know. They tell you the president has retired. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. They tell you the same thing when you call the mayor's office, the governor's office. Nobody wants to hear my tale of woe. But I decided I would call this man. Said, call me? I thought I would. Was my motive and intent pure? Was it to get sober? No, it was to get laid. But I thought, what the hell, I'll call the guy anyhow. So I did, and a woman answered the phone, and it didn't matter to me. I didn't care if she was the maid or the one-night stand. I'm not opposed to competition. Any good drinker loves a challenge, don't they? And so she said, just a minute. And the next thing I knew, the guy was on the phone. And the next thing I remember is that I was taking a shower, getting ready, getting cleaned up, and the telephone rang. And this guy says, hey, Helen, you remember calling me? I said, yeah, I remember calling you. He says, you do? And I said, yeah. And he said, I couldn't understand one damn thing you said. There was a lot of hatred and a lot of profanity. And I thought, no, that's not exactly correct. I vaguely remember, and you don't want to understand what I said, because my motive and intent was not pure. And he says, why don't I come tell you how Alcoholics Anonymous works? I says, no thanks. I got a commitment to go drink today. Bye. And a short time later, I found myself calling that man back, telling him I wanted to know how Alcoholics Anonymous works. And I hope that I never, ever forget that last drunk. I hope I can remember that one. And not that that's the only thing that made me concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. Not that that allowed me to say to myself that I am 100% alcoholic, not 99.9. But I hope I always remember it because it's pretty valuable stuff. And if I forget that, I may get to drink again. And I don't want to have to come back to the streets. I don't want to have to come back through the system of California. I don't want to have to start over from scratch if God allows me to do that. I want to be able to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, stone cold sober. And to try and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability, try and work with the newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this man, when I called him back, he says, okay, I'll come tell you how Alcoholics Anonymous works. And so he did. He come to the front door, and as soon as I opened that door, I had a breath of hope because he had a brown liquor store bag. And I could tell it had two quarts in it, and I thought, great, I finally met one of them assholes in Alcoholics Anonymous that'll drink with me. It just took me a long time. And he came in the house, and he asked where the ice was, and he asked where the glasses and stuff, and he was in the kitchen, and he opened up that bag to pour them drinks, and he had a bottle of cranberry juice in this hand, and he had a bottle of club soda in this hand. And I mean to tell you, I wanted to die. I thought, you mean we're going to do this thing straight up? No booze, no nothing. Oh. Oh, I thought, never. How am I going to look? And this guy had been sober 9 years. How am I going to look at this man in the eye? And then he started talking to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, here's how it works. You go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't drink in between meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You work with the newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous. You try and carry the message, try and give them a ride. And he said, you don't drink in between meetings. And as long as it took him to tell me, that's how long it took me to tell you, and then him and I ended up in bed together. And that didn't matter to me. I didn't give a shit that that was his wife, and that's what I said to him. That's your problem. You're the one that's married to her, pal. Not me. I don't have to eat and sleep with her. And that hard attitude and that cold attitude. And, you know, after about 5 months of sleeping with this guy every Friday night, he finally said to me, you know what, Helen? I don't want to see you anymore. You got a bad mouth and you got a bad attitude. And you're not going to like the next line, but it goes like this. I says, yeah, in between the sheets you can handle it all, but standing straight up, you ain't got any balls. And this guy walked right out. And I remember calling my sponsor, saying to myself, how dare him? Who does he think he is? And that's the messenger God wanted me to have. Was this lady that I had heard talk the Sunday before, or the Sunday before that, at the Tustin speakers meeting. And she was a redheaded lady, and I hated redheads, and I hated the name Annie. When you become gray, red looks good. Anyhow, but at that time I hated redheads and I hated the name Annie because that was my ex-husband's pull-around broad. And oh, God, did I hate that name. And everything that was attached to it. And the speaker talked that Sunday, and she talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, and she talked about where she had come from. And she talked about being on the streets. She talked about the first drink getting her drunk, and what Alcoholics Anonymous had done for her in that 13-year period of sobriety when I heard her talk. And I finally said to myself, this lady isn't lying. She's talking from the pit of her gut. She's telling the absolute truth. It's not one of them dummy up there, believe in God, get on your knees, and penance the rest of your life. I think that what I heard was, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And that was the other messenger. And her name was Irish Annie. And if you've been sober at all, or if you've listened to any tapes, a lot of people know Irish Annie. I was truly blessed to have Annie sent to me at that time, and Annie just passed away. She just passed away with breast cancer. And I loved Annie very much. And Annie's the first woman in my lifetime, not only in AA, but in my lifetime, that taught me the true definition of love. And she taught it to me through tough lessons. But most importantly, she taught to me that it was mutual, that it was going to be mutual respect, mutual understanding, and mutual caring. And that I didn't know. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous of savage mind only, just like the second step says. Talks about the belligerent one, the one that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous of savage mind, whose whole philosophy on life is threatened, and that's me. When you go to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're young and you're a kid and you're coming out of juvenile hall and you're coming out of jail, you're threatened. I had nothing in common with those people. And the truth of the matter was that I thought if I could make them hate me as much as I hated me, that they'd make me leave. And every time I was sent back to Alcoholics Anonymous, I made the same decision to go get drunk. And to do some more pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization so I could keep drinking at that. But I think I was truly spared when this redhead lady come into my life. Because she said things to me like this, Helen, you could lie to all of them, and you could lie to me, but you can't lie to you. Why don't you go look in that mirror and have your eyes meet that mirror and see what you get back? Oh, I know how to do my makeup. I've always known how to do my makeup. And I never had to see what I got back. I never had to look through that and see what was on the other side of that. All I had to see was what I wanted to see. And from the moment that redhead said that, I seen things that I couldn't stand to see. She knew where I was coming from, and I knew she knew. There was a slang saying when I first got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, don't bullshit a bullshitter. She said, you know, Helen, maybe you should try accepting your alcoholism. I says, I don't know how to do that. She said, listen to the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen to the winners. I says, I got bad news for you. We don't wear badges over here. We don't have winners and losers. And she said, yeah, you do. The winners are the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are talking about the 12 steps, that are talking about the 12 traditions, that are doing service work. And before I forget, I'd like to thank all of the doers, because it takes a lot of people to put this meeting together of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those are the people that in Alcoholics Anonymous that are carrying the message. The people that are making the coffee, putting down the chairs, picking it up. The people that are shaking hands, the greeters. The doers in Alcoholics Anonymous, the secretaries, the treasurers, the Virgils, the Wades, the people that are doing the tapes. There's all kinds of jobs here. But I never thought I'd have any. And I can tell you that for me, that I said, I won't do it. Let them do their own stuff. They want to beat their chest on how they don't drink and believe in God. Let them do their own stuff. I ain't going to help them. But when you have this redhead in your life, it's pretty hard not to. And she says, so how are you going to start accepting this, Helen? And I said, I don't know. But I also have to back up for a minute and tell you that first day of sobriety, October 22nd, I left that meeting and I went to school. Because I heard the speaker talk about going back to school, I assumed she had graduated from high school, and she seemed really educated when I first hear her, and I thought that she probably was a college grad or something like that. So I went back to school, and I said, I want to sign up for high school. And they said, okay. And they give me 3 days of testing at this little school in Orange, and after 3 days, the school psychologist called me in his office, and there I am. I show up in my red short shorts, my tank shirt, my push-up bra, my double set of eyelashes, and all of my bullshit. I'm ready to barter anything at any time. And I figure it was all going to be good news, but way down in my gut, I kept hearing what that lady said to me. You can lie to all of them, and you can lie to me, but you can't lie to you. And I knew that I didn't know any of the answers for 3 days. I knew I didn't know if it was A, B, C, or D on any of them questions. And the school psychologist looked me square in the eye that day, and he said, hey, Helen. And I said, yeah. And he said, we have all of your test results back, and it shows that you have dyslexia. And right away, I thought one of them assholes from Alcoholics Anonymous ran over here and told him I got VD, and I ain't got it. And that school psychologist in his suit and tie looked at me, and I said, no, I ain't got it. And he said, huh? No, we have the test results back. They show you have dyslexia, and they also show that you have some emotional blocks. No kidding, to about everything. And I said, so? And he looked at me, and he said, Helen, you don't know what it is, do you? And I said, no, I don't know what it is, but I know what I got and what I don't have, and I ain't got it. And I didn't even know how to say it. I really truthfully believed it was some form of ED. And I can tell you what the man said to me. He said, Helen, you have 5 areas of learning disabilities. Auditory, perception, pronunciation, transposition, and grounding. And your emotional blocks. And you can come to school tomorrow, and we'll give you your own teachers. We'll teach you how to read, and we'll teach you how to write. And I thought, how dare you insult me? He was absolutely correct. He said, you're on a 4th and 5th grade learning level. And I went home, and I called that lady, that redhead, and I said, this is what they told me. And I said, and I'm not going. And Annie said, come on, Helen, go to school tomorrow. I said, bullshit, I'm not going. And she said, come on, Helen, go to school tomorrow. I'll buy you a Snoopy lunch pail. Anything to go along with my push-up bra and my eyelashes. And right away, I just liked this lady a little more. I thought, how dare you? But something different happened. The next day, I show up at the morning AA meeting, and I left there, and I went to school. And when I walked in the classroom, the school teacher met me, and she said hi, and I said hi, and she was younger than me, and she was prettier than me. We already know she's smarter than me. I was on a 4th grade level, and I hated her. I hated her instantly. It was just like those people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated every one of them. I hated everybody. And she said to me, Helen, you have a chance here if you want to learn. And your teacher will be here in a few minutes. And when my teacher came, she introduced me to my teacher. And we started reading books like See Spot Run, Run Spot Run. My lessons in humility in Alcoholics Anonymous were to be fast and they were to be swift. They were to take me to my knees. People in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous would read Chapter 5. They would say, rarely have we seen a person fail that's thoroughly followed our path. And then I'd read behind them. They would start to read the 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless. I would then read behind them. That's how I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so glad I did. There were only two women in Alcoholics Anonymous in those early days that would have anything to do with me. One was Irish Annie and the other one was Mary Ray. Those are the only two ladies. Nobody else could understand me. They thought I was just some crazy loon, just there to make trouble, and I was. But I'm going to share with you for the next 20 minutes what I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. When they talked to me about the first step, admitting I was powerless over alcohol and that my life became unmanageable, I did not know that I was going to ever accept this step in its entirety. What is it that you expect me to accept? In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says this. It says, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that we never recover control. That's me. It goes on to say in that opening, that same page, it says that we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves. Learned. Doesn't mean I come here knowing any of this. This is what they taught me. I only share what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because if I don't do that, I'm setting myself up to get drunk again. It'll just be a period of time. And so for me, I started writing it out. I am 100% alcoholic. I got a dictionary and looked up them words, how to spell them, because I didn't know. And I'd sit at the table and I'd write it 3 times or 33 times. I'd sit in my classroom and I was going to get expelled from school for my profanity and my hatred. And I would sit there and I am writing, why am I 100% alcoholic? And I would look at it and I'd say, no, I'm not. But had I lost the ability to control my drinking? Was it the first drink that was going to get me drunk? Was it going to lead to the progression of the second and the third? Was it going to allow me to create more pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization? Was I going to get locked up again? Was it going to be more handcuffs, more shackles, more hypo needles? Where was it going to stop? Was I going to get to kill somebody else or were they going to kill me? That's what I never knew. And if I could have determined that, I wouldn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. I could do it on my own very nicely. I would know to lock myself up on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays when I was going to be a full-blown alcoholic. And the rest of the time, I could walk around with the rest of the fruitcakes. So that was my dilemma. And how was I going to overcome that? I overcome that with the groups of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the second step, it talks about we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And right away, I thought they were talking about God. And I said, and who's got the power? Well, as I look around the room tonight, I see a lot of people with a lot of power. Sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's something I didn't have. And I could look at those people that I was sitting in meetings with, and I'd say things like this to me. If Jane ain't drinking, I'm not going to. If Roy ain't drinking, I ain't going to. If so-and-so ain't drinking, I ain't going to. It sounds so corny. Sounds fourth grade level. Remember, that's where I was when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. In that second step, it's the one that talks about the belligerent one. And I'm so glad I found me there. Because if I wouldn't have found me, I may have not been as encouraged to stay. In the third step, it talks about making the decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him, not as I understand Him. And I didn't understand God anymore. When I was 5 years old, I went to move with my aunt. I left my family. My mom had split up the whole family. My father left. And I went to live with my aunt. My aunt put me in Catholic school. I had never been to church. I had never been anywhere. And all of a sudden, I'm showing up at this Catholic school, and they're putting me in a mass, and then they're putting me in school. I don't know what to do there. But I can tell you that I did the best I could do, and I had a wonderful, caring, loving nun. Her name was Sister Teresa Marie, and I was 5 years old. And Sister Teresa Marie would put her cold hand against my face, and she would say things like, "Helen, you're a very special child." Isn't that interesting that you can remember that when you get sober? But I never remembered that all of the time I was drunk and on the streets and in the middle of all of my alcoholism. And I'd look at this nun and I'd think, no, I'm not. Every day, one of the kids would pick what they wanted to pray for. And it was my turn to pick. And I prayed for the kids to pray for my father who died in the war. I was the only kid that didn't have a father. All the rest of the kids in that class had a father. And I didn't know I was supposed to tell them the truth, and a lie seems a lot more convenient. So I told them my father died in the war. And all of the kids were on their knees praying for my father that died in the war when my aunt came in to pick me up. And Sister Teresa Marie said to my aunt, she said, "I'm so sorry to hear about Helen's father." And my aunt said, "What about him?" And she said that he died in the war. My aunt said, "So am I." And when we got home, my aunt beat the hell out of me with a wooden hairbrush. That's how I understand punishment. And I learned to lie at a very young age if I wanted attention. Same age, I decided to run away because my aunt didn't like me. So it was not too much for me to go to the streets when I was young, because those people understood me, because those are the people that genuinely cared. Because I was going to find something there that I didn't find with any of these other people. I was about 7 years old when I got to move back with my mother and my other sisters. And we were living downtown L.A. in a one room on the third floor, coming down to go to the bathroom. And I loved it, because I could panhandle my way all the way to the front of the line. And I was a kid, and people would love to give me a nickel and a dime. Nobody wanted to say no. But I learned from those same people how to survive. And I think that alcohol allowed me to live, not die. And I will share this with you if you are new in Alcoholics Anonymous and having a hard time. Do not give up on yourself. Be patient. It took me 24 years of being sent to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am truly blessed that God can look after us. You know how they say God looks after cowards and fools? I was both. So how was I going to find this God? When I went to juvenile hall when I was 12 years old, Sunday came and they says, "Hey, you're going to go to church and you want to go to Catholic or Protestant." I said, "I ain't going. I don't have to go there." "Well, you have to go. And you don't want to go, you get to go to lockup." And when my mother got on the bus to come to East LA to see me, she didn't get in. And I could have cared less, because I was 12 years old and I was a badass and I wanted her to leave. I can tell you tonight that if I would have only taken the easier, softer way, but I would have done anything for attention. I think that God is within all of us, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says. It says all of us have some basic teaching of a God understanding, and I believe that, all men, women, and children. So in there it's called the coming of faith. And I was again looking to see how I was going to accept things in Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard people talking in meetings about doorknobs, tree branches, bullshit. And I says, no. And I found that little article, and I started reading this article. And it said this. It said that the co-founder, Bill W. of Alcoholics Anonymous, said that in his 20-some years, he was 27 years sober, I think, that his God was one of all power, justice, and love, who has a meaning, a purpose, and a destiny for all of us, no matter how little and no matter how haltingly, to grow in his image and to grow in his likeness. And I would read that 3 times and 33 times, and I would try and understand it. When I was 3.5 years sober, I could then define to you God as I understood him. And it was one of all power, justice, and love. And I believe he does have a meaning and a purpose and a destiny for all of us. It's just, I have to stay out of the way. In the fourth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about the searching and fearless moral inventory we made of ourselves. I had no idea how to do that. My redheaded sponsor, Annie, assured me that it wasn't going to be graded for spelling, punctuation, or anything. Not to write a journal, put some key words, just I'd know what they meant, she said. She was right. I took yellow pieces of paper and a red pen, and on those pieces of paper, I did the best I could do. I wrote things like one-night stands, married men, lying, cheating, stealing, robbing, whatever. And I labeled them one through and put key words there. And when Annie and I met, I knew exactly what that chicken stuff was I had written. I knew what it meant. Years later, in the fourth step in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found this where it talks about the seven deadly sins. It talks about lust, pride, greed, anger, gluttony, envy, and sloth. And I knew I had been guilty of those things 1,000 times over. And I was not shed of those in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I wasn't living like I was living before. I was no longer on the streets. I was no longer drinking wine and sleeping with derelicts in the damn cemetery. I was no longer locked up. I wasn't getting hypo needles. You didn't see me in shackles and cuffs. I wasn't riding down the street in a black and white bus, and I wasn't getting my picture snapped via the state of California. So things were getting better for me, weren't they? Could I recognize it? I think God worked very, very slow for me, and I'm so glad that that's the case. Because I see a lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get too well, too fast, too soon, and I'm glad that I was always bringing up the rear. Really glad. And I remember trying to do that fifth step with that lady, that redheaded lady I told you about, and we met, and I sat at the table, and I stammered and stuttered through all of them sheets of paper. I had written down all of this stuff. But I had two deep, dark secrets I was never going to tell anybody. Anybody. And they may have not been big to anybody else, but they were pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization to me with all the rest of the stuff. And I remember looking at this lady saying to her, Annie, can I trust you? And she looked me square in the eye and she said, yes, Helen, you could trust me. And I think it was God's will that I told those two deep, dark secrets to that lady. And she looked at me again and she said, Helen, I heard it all before in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I knew. And I know today that if I want to, I can keep bringing all of that crap and past up, but it ain't going to do any good. I don't regret my past, nor do I wish to shut the door on it. But I'm not going to live in that past. I'm not in bondage to that. I'm sober. I'm a female member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I come to meetings with my head up. And I bring my dignity and my self-worth. Because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous gave me, with the freedom from alcohol. But as soon as I take that first drink, I might as well just shuck it. It would be over, and I know it would be over. So I'm so glad that I had God with me on my shoulder to be able to say to that lady. In that sixth step, it talks about the removal of the defects of character. And in the seventh step, it talks about the shortcomings, humbly asking to remove those. I never understood the difference, you know. I used to sit in meetings for a long time. In fact, in the 70s, I got so pissed off. I was living up in East L.A. area, Montebello, that I would go to Spanish-speaking meetings just so I wouldn't have to hear Chapter 5, Chapter 3 in the 12th edition. Because I think I can't stand it anymore. I don't know how they stand it, but I can't stand it one more time. My cap's going to blow. I could just see me getting up and beating them with their metal chairs. I thought, God, this is nuts. But I can tell you today what it was in that sixth step. Talks about the difference between the sixth and the seventh step. And the defects of character were the things that I wanted permanently removed. Those are the things that I asked God for help daily and repeatedly to remove. The seventh step, the shortcomings, and it was an old man that talked about this from Palm Springs, and I went home and read the book, and I thought he's wrong before I read the book. Then when I read it, I went, oh, God, he's right. The seventh step was the things that were my liabilities, my minuses, that I could work on to improve and turn in to assets. And that was a lot for me to comprehend on my fourth and fifth grade learning level, but I understood it. I was going to school every day. I was going to three meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was up at 6 o'clock in the morning in the 7:30 meeting over at school. I'd leave school at 12 o'clock for lunch, and I'd go to the Orange Olive Club, and I'd have lunch, and I'd go back to school, and I'd leave school, and I'd go pick up some people for Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I'd go to the night meetings, and then I'd go with those people. My life was changing, but I had to get out of the way. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a chapter way in the back. It's called The Spiritual Experience. In that spiritual experience, it says this. It says that we have had a personality change manifested in many different forms among us that has given us a new attitude and outlook. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous did for me. But it didn't do anything until I became willing, and I didn't even know it was hitting me. And so I share with you this, that Alcoholics Anonymous for me only works if I do something. I got to show up. And I started pouring coffee. Can you imagine Sunday mornings I got to pick up the damn cigarette butts? Good thing I was a smoker or I'd really be pissed off. That's the job they give me, pick up cigarette butts. I thought, how dare you? And then I got to be a secretary, and then I got to be a treasurer, and I remember wanting to be that treasurer. God, did I want to be AA's treasurer. I could see me already stuffing my pockets, just lining them with gold. I thought, I'll just live off of all of them beat-the-chest sober people. Until it came time to steal that $5. And something happened. Right away it said, if you steal this $5, you're going to get drunk. This ain't your money. I went up to the podium and I said, I don't have any money to be your secretary. And I can't go pick up your stuff for this meeting. And that group conscience voted that I have $5 for gas money. And they gave me that as an allowance. Again, my lessons in humility were to be, and I had to learn them. I just want to share one last thing, and that's, I think, what time did you say it's over, Wade? Who's in charge here? 9 p.m.? I want to share about the amends. I'm going to skip the rest of the eighth step, and that was easy for me. I hated everybody equally. That's what I put on that eighth step. There was no confusion. I didn't have any prejudices. I hate them all equally. I don't care who they are. But they had all done me wrong. Come to find out, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was telling the truth. My troubles were of my own making. And that's what I had to come to believe. They didn't do it to me. I did it to me. And as soon as I could look in the mirror and say that and accept my alcoholism, I started becoming a whole person. But in that ninth step, it says that we make that amends except when to do so would injure them or others. And you know, I thought I would never have to do that with my mom and my sister. Both of them had been sober longer than me. And I was sober about 6 years when Sue M. from Orange said to me, you know what, when you go see your mother tomorrow, you better apologize. And I said, you ain't my sponsor. You can't tell me what to do. If you're a fighter, don't lose that quality. It's going to help keep you sober. And she said, Helen, I suggest you do that tomorrow. And my best friend at that time, Eileen, who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, drove me out to Corona, where my mom was living. Knocked on the door, and my mom answered the door. And as soon as my mom answered the door, Eileen said, oops, got to go to the bathroom, and went right past her. 1,000 times on the way from Orange County to Corona, I said, I am not going to do it. I will not tell that bitch I am sorry. Absolutely not. Sue's got her nose in somebody else's business, and I'm not sorry, and I'm not going to. And here's what flows out of my mouth. Mother, I am truly sorry for the things I did to you when I was drinking. I didn't mean to hurt you. And my mom reached back, small, frail, old lady, and took my hand and said, it's not all your fault. And that's what the ninth step promises. If we read that ninth step, it promises that if our amends is genuine and sincere, we will be amazed when we get back. And that day when my mother and I parted, we were friends. I don't know that I could ever have the qualities that my mother has. There's a lady that's able to forgive, maybe not forget. 1991, I was stone cold sober. My mother went to the hospital, and I went up to Corona to stay with her. And I don't drive the freeways anymore, so you don't have to worry about me. I only drove them freeways when I was drunk, but I can't do it stone cold sober, I'm telling you. And I want to thank Julie personally for bringing me out tonight, because I don't drive the freeways. And I don't think that I could ever have the qualities that my mother has. I'm so glad that Sue said that to me. God made her the messenger that day. I have to try and decipher that. Is this God's will? Is this the message to me? Or is this self-will and I'm supposed to let it go by? And what happened was that when she got so sick in 91, I went out there. And she went to the hospital and I would go every day and I would see her. My mom was doing very bad. And they were giving her all kinds of medication. And one morning I called the hospital and my mom was absolutely crazy. Nutso. And I left there and I went to the hospital right away. But what my mother said to me on the phone was this. I told them that you tried to kill me. I told them you stole all of my stuff. Don't ever come to this hospital. And I thought, oh my God, that was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and my mom thought it was happening right then. And I went to see my mom at that hospital, and I saw her strapped down in that bed, just like I used to look with those straps across me. And I thought, oh my God. And they said, you go get her a convalescent home, because she's never going to come back mentally. And I said, you go to hell. I'm taking her home. And for the first time, it was my turn to give. And I took her home, and I would take her, and I would feed her at the table, and I would take her back to bed. And I would pick her up, and I would put her in the tub, and I would bathe her, and I would put lotion on her and powder on her. And I would try and love my mother that loved four of us. It was my turn to give what Alcoholics Anonymous was giving me, not only to the people I sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in all my affairs. And this is a woman, when I was 12, 13 years old, go home drunk, loaded, and try and take my mother's life. And my mother can forgive. I don't know that I could have those qualities. And I share that with you because today my mom is still living, and I am her caretaker. She is now blind. She has Alzheimer's. And most of the days aren't easy. Most of the days my back's against the wall, not to drink, just not to hurt her, just not to revert back to violence. Because that's how I know how to solve it. Go get the goddamn crowbar and solve it. That's not what Alcoholics Anonymous says. Alcoholics Anonymous says, in all of my affairs. And so I am truly blessed to be here. I am truly blessed not to be what I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, to be sober, to be a member amongst members, to be able to still be a secretary, to be able to still sponsor people, to be the GSR work, intergroup work. If you want to be sober, you'll be sober. If you want to be drunk, you'll be drunk. That's my experience. That's what I share with you. And I thank you for having me here tonight. You know, Monday I'm going to go in for some surgery. And I say that because I know I take the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous with me. I'm going to see a lot of these same faces when I wake up, I'm sure. I'm really sure. I'm not only going to see my home group people, but I'm going to see you. And I'm going to know that Alcoholics Anonymous is working right here and right now. Primary purpose is to stay sober and to try to carry the message to the alcoholic that still suffers. And so I am blessed to be here. I'm blessed to be sober. And I thank you for your hospitality.